from West Virginia Public Broadcasting.
Support for the legislature today is provided by the following.
AARP West Virginia, your ally for real possibilities in the Mountain State. Online at aarp.org/WV. The West Virginia Higher Education Policy Commission, working to double the degrees produced annually in our state by 2025. Through increased opportunities for West Virginians to earn the credentials today's economy demands. The High Technology Foundation, building a stronger West Virginia. Online at wvhtf.org.
At the legislature today, additional funding for the state's road system is now in doubt after the actions of a House committee this morning, and delegates questioned whether West Virginia's Constitution really needs a provision protecting farmers. Lawmakers are set to vote on a number of bills in the final days of this legislative session, including one to drug test welfare recipients. Those stories and more coming up on the legislature today. Good evening, I'm Ashton Mara. A bill to increase taxes and fees to fund highway maintenance and construction projects could be stuck after a decision from the House Finance Chair today. Liz McCormick joins us with more.
Ashton, House Finance Chair Eric Nelson pulled Senate Bill 555 from the committee's agenda this morning. As approved in the Senate, the bill adds a trigger to increase the state's gasoline tax by 3 cents when the wholesale price of a gallon drops below $2. But the bill also generates dollars for the state road fund by increasing division of motor vehicle fees and the tax on purchasing a vehicle. The bill would raise nearly $350 million in highway funding. Nelson explained the decision to the committee this morning.
Couple of changes to our agenda. 555 will come off, and there was a lot of various discussion. I'll just have to say the support isn't there to move forward right now.
The road funding bill was the last revenue increasing measure being considered by lawmakers this session. The House Finance Committee has already killed a bill to increase the state's tobacco tax. It is possible Senate Bill 555 could resurface on the committee's agenda, but to be passed in the full House by Saturday, the committee would have to approve the bill tomorrow. That is unless lawmakers agree to suspend the rules of the chamber and move the bill more quickly through the voting process on the floor. For the legislature today, I'm Liz McCormick.
Lawmakers have until Saturday to consider and vote on any bills that might still be outstanding this session, all except for one, the budget bill. After the end of the regular session Saturday night at midnight, Governor Tomlin will extend the session for 3 days to allow members of both the House and Senate to negotiate a final budget for the 2017 fiscal year. Tomlin has said, though, if lawmakers aren't near a final version of the budget after those 3 days, he would consider sending the legislature home and bringing them back for a special budget session later in the year. Going into this legislative session, lawmakers needed to backfill a more than $380 million gap in the 2016 fiscal year. That ends in June. For 2017, the governor's budget office estimated that gap would be as large as $466 million. The gap is largely due to decreasing severance tax collections. The full legislature has yet to approve any revenue-increasing measures, which likely means larger cuts to state agencies. And Governor Tomlin has criticized members of the legislature for focusing more on social issues than fiscal ones, and the House is on track to put another of those bills up to a vote. Delegates will vote tomorrow on a bill that would require some applicants of the Temporary Assistance for Needy Families program to go through a drug screening process. Liz McCormick has this story.
Senate Bill 6 requires the West Virginia Department of Health and Human Resources to apply for permission from the federal government to begin a drug screening and testing program. In that program, applicants of Temporary Assistance for Needy Families or TANF benefits could be tested if there's reasonable suspicion those applicants are using drugs if they've been convicted of a drug crime in the past 3 years. The bill creates a three-strike system within the program. After one failed drug test, the TANF recipient does not lose any benefits. benefits, but must enter a rehabilitative or workforce training program. After the second failed test, the recipient loses benefits for 1 year or until completion of the workforce or rehabilitative program. After a third failed test, he or she loses benefits for life. In any step in the process, the benefits given to children in the home will not be taken away. The DHHR is required to find another adult to distribute the benefits to, just like they do in other programs. Senate Bill 6 is on second reading now in the full House, but after a long floor session this morning, House leadership pushed the debate over the bill to Tuesday night. Majority Leader Darrell Coles.
It's first out of the gate when we come back, Senate Bill 6, and it has a number of amendments pending, and I expect a good deal of debate and discussion on the bill when we get back this evening.
During that evening session, delegates will consider four amendments proposed by the minority party. One of those amendments would require state lawmakers to be drug tested. If a legislator fails that test, he or she would be required to enter a drug treatment program. Another amendment would remove marijuana from the list of drugs that could cause an applicant to lose his or her benefits. The third would expand the drug testing program beyond just those who are applying for TANF benefits to any person who is applying for funding from the state, including the officers of private companies. And the final possible amendment would require the DHHR obtain a warrant for the drug test from a judge. All of the amendments are proposed by Democrats. Coles says it's unlikely any of those amendments will be adopted and that the bill is strong as it is. Those opposed to the bill have voiced concerns about discriminating against low-income West Virginians, but Coles says that's not the case.
I think it's signaling out those that the state has a duty to make sure the money is spent wisely. So whatever programs that those are in, it's our duty to make sure the money goes to where we need it to go, to help those who we need it to help. And it's not diverted for drug use or other reasons. So it's not necessarily targeted to any economic group. It's just trying to use state government funds wisely.
Other motions in terms
a recent
of
poll of likely West Virginia voters found 77% supported drug testing welfare recipients. For the legislature today, I'm Liz McCormick in the House.
Members of the House will take up the drug testing bill and possible amendments during an evening floor session tonight. You can watch that live at 7 p.m. on the West Virginia Channel or on our website, wvpublic.org. Earlier today, a House committee considered a resolution that would allow voters to decide if the state constitution should protect the right to farm and ranch in West Virginia. The senator proposing the constitutional amendment defended the change in front of delegates this morning, who questioned the need for such a broad defense for agriculture.
Senate Joint Resolution 14 was approved by senators in early March. The resolution would add the right to engage in natural, traditional, or modern farming techniques to the state's Bill of Rights, but the amendment would have to be approved by voters before taking effect. Many members of the House committee expressed concerns about how broad the amendment is, but its lead sponsor, Senator Robert Carnes, says its broadness does not prevent the state from regulating agriculture, much like the state regulates other constitutionally guaranteed rights.
What I'd actually do is refer you to Section 322 in the Constitution, which relates to the right to keep and bear arms in West Virginia. And if you, this was actually, you know, part of the discussion we had was to make this somewhat mirror that provision, which doesn't mean we can't regulate firearms, doesn't mean we can't regulate gun ownership, but it means it's a fairly broad right that we recognize. And so we weren't trying to preclude the ability for a DEP to prevent someone from spreading a chemical fertilizer into a creek. This is not about that.
Still, the committee's minority chair, Delegate Tim Manchin, says the amendment strengthens rights not offered to other West Virginia property owners. He questioned Carnes.
That would give such a person a very strong interest in being able to farm, but not an absolute interest.
It sounds to me like what we're doing is giving them an unequal property interest.
Well, they have the property. They have the property, so I believe that they do have an unequal property interest. They're the ones who paid for it.
But if I own property next door, shouldn't my property and my right of use of that property be just as equal as anybody else's, as long as I'm using it legally and
I agree.
For a purpose that allows me to pursue happiness under the Constitution?
I agree. And if the question were he wants to put his farming operation on your property, then your rights clearly outweigh his rights. If you own this piece of property and he owns this piece of property, there's always a balancing act between the two property owners. Sometimes it's handled because you're good neighbors, and sometimes it's handled because the courts have to get involved. This is simply saying, and by putting it on the ballot, we're asking the people of West Virginia, because this is a public interest question, really. Do we want to give agricultural interest in West Virginia a little bit more teeth on the backside to say that we are a rural state, we want to support our farmers, we want to maintain the quality of life that we have here in West Virginia, and this helps to reinforce that a little bit, I believe.
There were questions from members about the amendment's protections for illegal farming practices. A few used marijuana as an example. But Carnes says the amendment will not allow farmers to grow illegal plants for sale or use. The amendment would not change the legal status of things like marijuana or hemp plants. Others said the amendment was just not necessary because property rights are already guaranteed in West Virginia. Before voting on the measure, Delegate Justin Markham urged the committee to proceed with caution.
Right. The farm statute runs afoul with the Fifth Amendment's taking clause, and it's all due to the broadness and vagueness of what was passed in Missouri and in Iowa. So what we're going to have is more lawsuits brought to the state based upon this poorly drafted, very broad written amendment to what we call our sacred constitution. Ladies and gentlemen, this is not a bill. This is our constitution, and I urge caution when we touch this.
Members of the House Judiciary Committee approved the resolution without amendments. It now heads to the full chamber for further consideration, but will have to be approved in the House by a two-thirds vote.
An update now to a lawsuit pending in the case against Supreme Court Justice Brent Benjamin, who's attempting to obtain state dollars to fund his reelection campaign. On Friday, a Kanawha County Circuit judge ruled Benjamin should not be eligible for the state's public campaign financing program, blaming the State Election Commission for allowing qualifying donations that did not comply with state code. The suit was brought by Beth Walker, who is challenging Benjamin for his seat on the court. Today, Benjamin's campaign filed for a stay in the case, asking Kanawha County Circuit Judge Todd Kaufman to essentially prevent his decision from taking effect until after it could be appealed. In the filing, Benjamin's attorney said there is little precedent for the court to follow in the case because the campaign financing laws are new statutes and have never been challenged. Benjamin plans to appeal the circuit court decision to the West Virginia Supreme Court, but as of this afternoon, an appeal had not yet been filed. We return to the Eastern Panhandle tonight, where we meet four members of the House of Delegates in this edition of Meet Your Lawmaker.
Larry Faircloth is a Republican from Berkeley County. Elected in 2012, he represents the 60th House of Delegates District. Delegate Faircloth serves as the Vice Chair of the House Committee on Interstate Cooperation. Walter Duke represents the state's 61st House of Delegates District. A Republican, he's from Berkeley County. Duke served as a member of the House of Delegates from 2002 to 2010 and was re-elected in 2014. He serves as the Vice Chair of the House Education Committee. John Overington is a Republican from Berkeley County. He represents the state's 62nd House of Delegates District. Delegate Overington was elected to the House of Delegates in 1984 and is the longest-serving member of the chamber. He serves as the chairman of the House Committee on Industry and Labor. Michael Folk was elected to the House of Delegates in 2012. He represents the state's 63rd House District as a Republican. Folk is from Berkeley County. He serves as the vice chair of the House Committee on Pensions and Retirement.
If you've followed West Virginia politics over the years, two names are probably familiar to you: Republican Tom Potter and Democrat Chuck Chambers. Both served in the West Virginia House of Delegates, and both faced many of the same challenges confronting the legislature today. In this story, produced by Russ Barber, Suzanne Higgins brings us the tale of two lawmakers.
After graduating from WVU Law School, Tom Potter served in the U.S. Air Force from 1957 to 1960 as a legal and claims officer, influenced by a visit to Charleston in his youth.
The reason I became a lawyer was because as a high school student in Montgomery High School up the river, I had come down here one day and visited the legislature. Thereafter visited a courtroom and attended a trial. All of that led me to determine that I wanted to be a lawyer.
Potter moved to Charleston and began practicing law in 1960. 4 years later, the young Republican ran unsuccessfully for a seat in the House of Delegates.
I came to town without knowing very many people. And I sensed that if I was to be a successful lawyer, which was my ultimate goal, I would need to know more people and to have a bigger presence in the community.
Like Potter, Chuck Chambers, now Chief Judge of the United States District Court's Southern District of West Virginia, also earned his law degree at WVU. That was in 1978, the same year the Huntington Democrat made his first bid for public office. His reason for running, like Potter, to expand his client base.
I was a young lawyer, just started practicing law here in Huntington with my dad, and one afternoon I walked into my office, and a fellow lawyer was sitting there talking to my dad and was convincing my father that I should run for the House of Delegates as a way to get my name out and get known as a lawyer. So that's what got me started.
Tom Potter ran again for the House in 1966 and won, entering the chamber as a member in 1967 when the number of Republicans grew from 9 to 36.
As a result, the dynamics of the House changed with that many Republicans, and many of us were young lawyers and people with some business experience that had a different view of West Virginia and of what we needed to do to solve its problems than they were used to. Then, as now, we trailed the nation in nearly every category that was important to be high in, and we were low in those where we should have been high, and we were high in those we should have been low. So we had more or less the same agenda as today. Not quite as extreme, perhaps, in some areas, but a pro-business, pro-development attitude.
Potter served 8 years in the legislature and chaired the West Virginia Republican Party from 1968 to 1976. While the number of Republicans in the House fluctuated over the years, the party was never able to take a majority of the chamber during Potter's career. Still, he says he and his fellow delegates at the time, no matter their political affiliation, were committed to the state and its people.
I had as many friends on the Democratic side as I did the Republican side, and it was a good place to be. And we felt that we could accomplish something good.
Chuck Chambers served as Speaker of the House for 10 years, beginning in 1987, 8 years after he was elected to the body. He says much like today, it was a time of significant economic downturn for the state.
We watched an exodus of jobs in our state. We had fiscal crisis after fiscal crisis. It was a really tough time, and we started to balance our books, started focusing on making sure that we had the money to cover our obligations and to fund our programs honestly and completely and to start investing in what we needed to invest in to help the state grow.
Chambers left the West Virginia House of Delegates in 1996 after serving 18 years and was appointed to the court in 1997. He says whether people see him as a career politician or a career public servant, he believes they're one and the same.
Very few people come into this not committed at some level to public service. That's why people do it. And certainly because of the political environment that you have to go through, there's a little bit of politician in the best public servant, but I think that's good. I don't see those things as contradictory at all. There's nothing bad or evil about politics. You know, people make it messy and people make it distasteful at times, but for the vast majority of folks, being politicians and being in public service are the same thing.
Chambers' advice for budding West Virginia politicians: begin in the legislature, where he says every day is a learning experience.
Serving in the legislature is a great education process. It teaches you a lot about what's going on in the state. It teaches you a lot about how the political process and government really do work. And those are skills that everybody needs if you're going to move up in office.
For West Virginia Public Broadcasting, I'm Suzanne Higgins.
Jeff Branham is a new face in the West Virginia Senate this year. Although he may not be pushing the red or green buttons voting on important pieces of legislation, that doesn't make his job as Senate doorkeeper any less important. In his own words, Mr. Branham describes a day in his life at the State House.
My name is Jeffrey Branham. They call me Jeff. I'm the head doorkeeper this year for the West Virginia State Senate. I was born in Charleston. Grew up actually in a little town in Boone County, Whitesville, West Virginia. I'm really good friends with Senator Gonch, Ed Gonch. He's a family friend and we attend the same church. I've always been one that even when I was with the steel company for 30 years, I always looked at the job ads and classifieds, and so I noticed there was one for a proofreader this year for the Senate. I was thinking about applying, and I saw Senator Gonch at church, and I mentioned that to him. Senator Gonch said, "I don't think you want to do that. I think you probably are more qualified to be a doorkeeper." When I found out I got the job as head doorkeeper, I was, first of all, excited. Very much looking forward to learning the process, getting an opportunity to meet new people, and, you know, just anxious to get started, basically. If there are groups that are coming in a particular day for a resolution or a photo opportunity, I monitor them and kind of explain to them what's going to happen and how the process works and when they are to come in and where they go and so forth. And really just to protect all the general parts of the Senate chamber, both inside and outside. The things I like about being part of the process of the legislature is you're exposed and you get to hear and be a part of what's going on. New laws, new discussions, new methods and philosophies that we will use to go forward. And even though I might not be a lawmaker per se, I feel to be a bigger part of that just by being here. Three members of the Senate appointed by the President.
Corey Palumbo represents the state's 17th senatorial district from Kanawha County. A Democrat, he was elected to the West Virginia Senate in 2008. He previously served two terms in the State House of Delegates. Senator Palumbo is the former chairman of the Senate Judiciary Committee and the son of Senator Mario Palumbo, who served five terms in the West Virginia Senate. Eric Householder is a Republican from Berkeley County. He represents the state's 64th House of Delegates district. He was elected in 2010. Delegate Householder serves as the vice chair of the House Finance Committee. He is also the assistant majority whip. Jill Upson was elected to the House of Delegates in 2014. A Republican, she's from Jefferson County. Delegate Upson represents the state's 65th House of Delegates district. During the interim session, Upson chaired the Committee on Minority Issues. She's the first African-American Republican woman elected to the West Virginia House of Delegates.
Lawmakers are in the final week of this legislative session with just 4 days left to approve proposed bills. You can watch the House and Senate floor sessions every day on the West Virginia Channel at 11 a.m. or stream them on our website at wvpublic.org. That includes the final day of meetings for the 82nd West Virginia Legislature. That coverage also begins at 11 a.m. Saturday and will follow lawmakers through the final gavel at midnight. This has been the Legislature Today. I'm Ashton Mara. Thanks for joining us.
Support for the legislature today is provided by the following.
AARP West Virginia, your ally for real possibilities in the Mountain State. Online at aarp.org/WV. The West Virginia Higher Education Policy Commission, working to double the degrees produced annually in our state by 2025. Through increased opportunities for West Virginians to earn the credentials today's economy demands. The High Technology Foundation, building a stronger West Virginia. Online at wvhtf.org.
From West Virginia Public Broadcasting.